In this week's market update, the Fed dominates as taper talk spooks investors, the Bank of England moves into focus this week, and some thoughts on Bitcoin. Once again, there's just one story that matters in markets. The Federal Reserve is front and centre on every investor's radar after a rate-setting meeting that really shook sentiment. Markets are still reverberating from last Wednesday's shift in tone by the US Central Bank. Having spent months telling the market what it wanted to hear, that it would tolerate higher inflation and keep interest rates on the floor for the foreseeable future, the Fed changed its tune just enough last week to really spook investors. No one should really have been massively surprised by what Jerome Powell and his fellow rate setters had to say. But when everyone is betting one way and engaged in wishful thinking, it doesn't take a huge change of direction to unsettle things. So, what did the Fed unveil last week? Well, most importantly, 7 of the 18 members of the Open Markets Committee said they expected a rate increase in 2022, compared with just 4 before. 13 said they expected at least one rate hike in 2023 versus just 7 before. The average expectation is for 2 hikes next year to between 0.5% and 0.75%. So just as was the case in 2013 at the time of the last major taper tantrum in the markets, none of this should be a huge shock. The Fed chair said very plainly in his press conference after the announcement of these so-called dot plots that the committee as a whole still expects inflation to be transitory and so sees no immediate need to even discuss raising rates. However, and again, no big surprise here, with employment bouncing back, he added that it will make sense at some point in the future to discuss reducing the Fed's purchases of bonds. When you consider the context in which these comments were made, inflation rose to 5% a couple of weeks ago, that is pretty measured and cautious commentary. As well as inflation rising, wages are on the up, employment is strong, commodities are booming, and housing also on the up. It really is not so very surprising against that backdrop that the Fed should warn us that at some point in the future, policy will have to get ever so slightly tighter. And what was the market's reaction? Well, outsized, I would say. Here are some of the key shifts. First, the yield on short bonds rose to reflect the likelihood of higher rates, while that on long bonds fell to reflect the fear that tighter policy will put the brakes on the recovery and reduce inflation further out. That flattening in the yield curve is quite unusual well before the Fed has actually done anything but just started talking about it. Second, the dollar spiked higher again in anticipation of higher interest rates and the US moving ahead of rivals on the tightening journey. The dollar has strengthened against both the euro and the pound this week. Third, growth stocks, which have spent the last few months lagging behind cyclical and value plays, the so-called reflation trade, recovered their appeal for nervous investors. Those investors prefer growth shares in a less buoyant environment, suggesting that investors are no longer worried about the Fed being behind the curve, but too far in front of it. In other words, tightening too much too soon. Fourth, commodities tumbled. The Bloomberg Commodity Index fell by 3% last week, its worst performance since the start of the pandemic, as investors abandoned this traditional hedge against inflation. Copper fell 8% last week, and lumber, which has boomed on the back of the strong US housing market, has now fallen more than 40% since its peak. Shares were a bit slower to react, but they ended the week down on both sides of the Atlantic, with Asia picking up the mood at the beginning of this week. Japan was hardest hit, with the Nikkei down 2.6% on Monday, and there were falls in China, Korea and Australia too. Perhaps the best guide to what might lie ahead this summer comes from 2010, when investors were coming off the back of another remarkable rally in prices following the financial crisis. The chart of the recovery from the 2009 low looks strikingly like that from the pandemic lows last year. The rise this time has been slightly more, up 90% rather than 80% 12 years ago. But the drivers were just the same. Expectations of a recovery in corporate earnings, leading to sharply higher valuation multiples long before the recovery in profits was actually delivered. The bad news is that the summer of 2010 saw a 16% correction as the Fed ended its first phase of quantitative easing and investors lost their nerve in the middle of the transition from the PE-driven early cycle to the earnings-driven mid-cycle. The Fed too lost its nerve in due course and started a second phase of bond buying, QE2, a few months after the market correction. And this has been the pattern of things ever since the financial crisis, markets responding positively to central bank and government stimulus, and then throwing their toys out of the pram at the first sign that the extraordinary measures are going to be reined back or reversed. All the major drawdowns for the stock market, and there have been half a dozen since 2009, have coincided with rising expectations about interest rates. One of the biggest was at the end of 2018, when markets fell by 20%, just clocking up a short bear market, as the Fed, prematurely it turned out, started raising interest rates and shrinking its balance sheet. So, after 15 months of pretty steady rises in share prices, the stock market probably looks more vulnerable today to a correction than it has since the pandemic began. This is not necessarily a reason to worry longer term. Remember, the market returned to a strong growth path after the 2010 correction and again in early 2019. But it does suggest a bit of caution is warranted short term. Now, back on this side of the Atlantic, it's the Bank of England's turn in the spotlight this week. The rate setting meeting on Wednesday and Thursday is unlikely to deliver any changes, but after a higher than expected rise in the CPI rate last week to 2.1%, above expectations of 1.8%, investors will be more than usually focused on what Governor Andrew Bailey has to say. The meeting is, by the way, the final one for Andy Haldane, the bank's chief economist, who's moving on after 32 years at the bank. He's been one of the strongest voices in recent meetings, highlighting the risk of rising inflation on the back of a stronger than predicted bounce back from the pandemic. And finally, a few observations on Bitcoin, which received another blow this week as China intensified its clampdown on the energy-intensive mining of coins. Local governments are under pressure from Beijing to reduce energy intensity as the country targets carbon neutrality by 2060. China accounts for around 75% of all crypto mining, much of which is fueled by coal-fired electricity. However, the latest clampdown in Sichuan, an area with abundant supplies of renewable energy from its extensive dam network, suggests there is more to the clampdown than just green considerations. How this plays out in the price of Bitcoin remains to be seen, but the cryptocurrency has bounced around near the current price of $30,000, or half its recent peak, for several weeks now, and technical analysts suggest that a rise to $40,000 or more would be required to indicate an end to the recent slide. An interesting comparison of Bitcoin and the S&P 500 shows just how volatile the cryptocurrency has been over the past 10 years. During that period, it's been more than 20% below its recent two-year high, more than 70% of the time. That compares with the main US shares benchmark, the S&P 500, which since 1900 has been that far underwater just 28% of the time. It just goes to show how much stronger nerves you need to be invested in crypto than in the mainstream stock market.
Please be aware the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information does not constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Investors should also note that the views expressed may longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Reference to specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. It is meant for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. issued by Financial Administration Services Limited, authorised and regulated in the UK by the Financial Conduct Authority. Fidelity, Fidelity International, the Fidelity International logo and F symbol are trademarks of FIL Limited.